This week, we've got some great contributions from a few different brothers. First up, we've got award-winning author Bull Garlington, who brings us a heartfelt post about his concerns for the future, what it means to connect with people, and his own experiences in this realm. Then, we read a piece by Brother Chuck Dunning Jr. Is Freemasonry just a fraternity? Is there more to it than meets the eye? And have the previous generations spun us out of control by imploring this idea of Masonry being just a fraternity, and its only secrets are that it has none? And finally, we wrap it up with a new segment from Brother Mark St. Cyr in the Education Application Series. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 609. Yes, we are a whole week behind. I had intended on getting this episode out to you all last weekend, but with the preparations for MasonicCon Chicago, just get pushed it back until today. So we will be using this as this week's episode, and we'll be back on schedule next week. As usual, I want to thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners. Without you, we cannot make this show happen. I want to thank a couple of folks who signed up last week. It was very awesome of you to do that, and we really appreciate it. It all goes back into the production of this show, which is to say, I don't pocket any money. This all just goes back into the production and paying the bills. If you're interested in assisting the WCY podcast and its mission to bring quality and trusted Masonic information to all those interested, please head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out your various options. We have both PayPal and Patreon options available. The first piece I want to give you this week is a really interesting one that was published by a good friend of mine and a brother, of course, in the local area. He's an award-winning author. He's been on the show in the past to talk about various topics. I'll put links to those episodes in the show notes for this episode in case you want to go back and hear more. This one is from Brother Christopher Garlington, better known as Bull Garlington. He is a wonderful speaker, a great writer, and I should mention that he is real in his writing. So where appropriate, there may be some bleeps, and in other times, maybe not some bleeps. So this is your warning in case you have little ears. But in its entirety, I will say that this article is important. Let's give a listen.
I was talking to my therapist about how I worry that my adult kids are so isolated. I told him all of them, my nieces, my nephews too, that whole generation, they're the loneliest people I've ever seen. Turns out I'm late to the party, or the complete and total lack of a party. If you're in your 20s or early 30s, there's a good chance you're isolated as hell, lonely as fuck, possibly facing a kind of despair humankind has never faced previously. And look, I'm no fucking expert or anything like it. I'm a completely unsuccessful humor writer. I don't have a degree in psychology. My resume doesn't say shit about my abilities as a counselor or a mental health expert. So regarding this article, buyer beware. Maybe I'm just an old idiotic guy yelling, "Those kids and their damn phones!" Except I'm not. I'm a boomer. Pretty much helped your generation get into this mess because I was fascinated by the internet and I thought iPhones are a fucking miracle. I was too busy listening to hair metal and doing drugs and carousing to recognize that the world was going to shit. And my generation was shoveling it as high as it would go. In retrospect, I maybe should have protested more, maybe voted for smarter people, but I wasn't and I didn't. So here I am in my third home with you living in the basement while the house burns down. Which is to say, I'm aware of your trust issues. So what I'm about to tell you might seem to come from a place of privilege. It may seem disingenuous. It may come off as some vintage-ass blather from a geezer. But I promise you it is not. I promise you that there is an antidote to the loneliness and despair you feel. It's one your dad, maybe even your granddad, knew about. I'm talking about Freemasonry. So, alright, stay with me. I know, your bullshit alarms just went off hard. They just shot into the flat earther red zone, but hear me out. I know it works because I am a Freemason. And before I found my lodge, I was lonely as hell. I was in despair. Freemasonry saved my ass from going completely bonkers. Here's how it worked for me. I think it'll work for you too. Hell, I know it will. A little about me. Back in the early aughts, my wife and I were looking forward to sending our kids to college, but realizing we could never afford it. I was in retail, she was in environmental fieldwork, so she went back to school to become an attorney, and I prepped to become a freelance writer. She got hired by a massive, terrifying law firm and disappeared into a maelstrom of meetings and cases and all-night work sessions. I quit my job at the store to be an at-home dad, and here's where shit got weird. I found myself at home, alone. We had moved to Chicago when I was 30, my daughter was 5, my son was a toddler, all my friends were back home in Florida, my family was in Alabama. I was doing fine when I had a staff and co-workers and a routine, but suddenly I'm at home, alone, dropping my kids off at school and basically spending the day not talking to anyone. I didn't know how the fuck I was supposed to make money freelancing. None of my pitches landed, so I basically didn't understand my job. My wife left for work at dawn and got home when it was dark. I talked to my friends through email, sometimes over the phone, but this was way before social media, and they'd moved out of state and got different jobs, and Jeff didn't have Bill's number, and Sheila was a ghost somewhere in Europe, and Susan was a teacher, and I'd lost her deets, and here's the thing. All of this is analogous to what you're going through. Isolated. Alone. Few actual connections offline. Working a Zoom job you don't completely understand or trust, and you might just be finding yourself going ever so slightly f***ing insane. I did. One day I just broke down. Dropped the kids off at school, came home, and misery took over. I crumpled into tears. Now look, I'm a crier, I'm fine with it, but usually, when something brings on the tears, they start out hot and then they kind of melt away. Crying is a pressure release, so the pressure tapers off while you're crying. You cry less and less until a couple of minutes after you start. You're better just sniffling, really. That's not what happened. My crying got worse. Its intensity didn't wane. It built until I was almost howling and wondering what in the living hell was going on. I called my uncle down in Florida, who talked me down and offered some wise words. You used to talk to people all day at work. Before that, you hung out with your friends all the time. Now, you don't do anything. You talk to your dog. You need to get the fuck out of the house. Then he says, find a lodge. Look, I was skeptical, but honestly, if I didn't shake hands with a grown human and have an adult conversation soon, I was going to wander off into the goddamn desert. And Freemasons are all about handshakes, so I reached out. I was invited to visit a lodge near my house. I walked into a room filled with men in suits. It looked like a one side of a family reunion. There were men in their 80s to men in their 20s, and Kevin. Fucking Kevin, a guy I used to work with, a guy I knew. I was overjoyed to see him. He introduced me around. I must have shaken hands with 30 people. I had a halfway decent supper with perhaps an overabundance of green beans, and enjoyed an unforgivably average cup of coffee. I also had some real, genuine, decent conversations with grown-ass men. I went home with a warm fraternal afterglow and an application to join, which I did, and here's what happened. Every 2 weeks for the last 20 years, I've made the 7-minute drive to the lodge and sat there in that ancient old room with ancient old men to listen to them argue about dues and plan fundraisers and tell jokes from 1974 and drink that shitty coffee. But some of those men and I turned ourselves into a crew. We all came in around the same time and went through all the same stuff, and it all just turned into this strong, unbreakable bond. One which is still there, still strong. Now, we're turning into the old men. We argue about dues. Our jokes are from 2003, but still, our hair's turning white and we can't hang like we used to, sure. But for all those 20 years, These dudes I met have had my back, and I've had theirs. They have taken the liberty of calling me on my own bullshit more than once. I've helped them move. We've come together to mourn for Sean, a loss that nearly killed us. My wife has Dan's number on tap for emergencies. These guys have been in my house, have eaten my food, they've borrowed my books. They are family. We are family. And here's why I'm telling you this. Because you're a man. You're somewhere between 25 and 35. You and your friends were already drifting apart in 2019. Jamie had a kid, so he had to get real. Now he's an electrician with a mortgage and a wife, and he's got a schedule. Dana got a job in San Diego, so he only talked during game chats, which is cool, but still not the same. Then COVID hit. Holy f***. You started working from home. You still work at home. Isolation and life online is your life now. You haven't touched another person in a month. Even if you work a gig job, you're alone at it. Your mom keeps asking you what you're going to do with your life. Your dad seems to be 90% couch. They get drunk and watch boat fill videos. You can't sleep. You find yourself doom scrolling at 3 in the morning, or rabbit holing on the dumbest shit, or staring at all the places currently on fire and praying that the STEM kids of your generation can bring their ideas online fast enough to save the world, and you just feel like nothing's going to work out. One of the reasons you're not getting out of the house is because there's nowhere to go. The whole world comes to you. Books, groceries, Big Macs, hell, use your phone to get laid. Why even go outside? And you know the downside of this, it's all the shit we've laid out. And the awful, overwhelming, crippling despair, Jesus Christ, the hopelessness, it f***s me up just talking about it. And there's no known solution. Right now, your generation is unspooling like a goddamn feedback loop. And believe me, us old guys are a little freaked out about it. I'm terrified for my kids. I think about my daughter's isolation and have to take a few breaths just to keep it together. So I'm advising you, my generational Zed friend, to join this storied fraternity. It's cheap, mostly. There's a lodge close to you, probably. They will be happy to give you a tour, an application, and I don't know if I've mentioned the coffee, but there will be plenty, and you won't like it much. Now look, Freemasonry ain't no silver bullet. It's not rehab. This essay isn't a f***ing brochure. The men in the local lodge are local men. I'm biased a little here, so is a fraternity, that they trend towards the more open-minded, better-educated local men. My experience has proven this to be true. But a guy who talks too much at work will tend to hold court at lodge. If a dude is a self-appointed expert on everything from industrial logistics to Australian zip ties, his expertise will come with him into lodge. And your troubles and your anxieties won't somehow evaporate. The wildfires will still burn. Your job will still be weird as f***. And those 6 a.m. Zooms will never be necessary. Dana still lives in San Diego. Jamie's still busy. Your rent's still too goddamn high. Your hopelessness will not magically disappear behind the closed doors of a lodge meeting, but something magical will happen. You won't be alone. These old guys who've been in Freemasonry forever have developed their intangible assets, the soft skills, all the resume mills are talking about, to ninja levels. A retired septuagenarian has been through some shit. He may drink cheap beer and the worst scotch, and he absolutely does not understand TikTok, but he listens with compassion. He is charming. He can turn a complete stranger into a lifelong friend in the time it takes a waiter to bring more fries. He survived decades of legendary fuck-ups. He was in a war. He is the stand-in grandpa you didn't know you needed. There's a whole room of these guys, and they will bring you in. You'll be passing out flyers or filling the canned drink tubs with ice or running the slide projector. The 50-something leader calls you bucko, and he doesn't look anything like your dad, but when he shakes your hand, he's got the same calluses and the same grip. There's a whiff of Old Spice and cigarettes, and it's like hearing an old song again after so many years. After a meeting, some of you go to the local dive bar, and that old motherfucker tells your story that sounds like a Lost Mad Men episode. And another dude there who is your age gets you into a conversation about good whiskey, and you drop your bourbon knowledge like a boss, and three people shut up and listen, and here's the thing. You go back, you keep going to meetings, and after a while, you develop your own crew. There's a handful of you guys who you just seem to gel with, and you start hanging out off meeting nights. You help one of them move. Another one starts a Facebook group of just you guys, and it's nothing but dark, dark-ass humor that sends you into fits of laughter. One day, one of them texts, some shit went down at work, and he's thinking about giving it up. You meet up at that same dive bar and drink shitty IPAs and play a run of late 90s classics on Touch Tunes, and you don't really say anything about his job. You both just sit there, watch the game, drink your beers, and grunt, which Butler could do all by himself, but he doesn't, because he doesn't have to. He's got you. So, here's the thing. I'm not promising you anything. Freemasonry has millions of members all over the world. Your experience will be your experience, and maybe I've been lucky. And I know a lot of Freemasons who bitch about their lodge and talk about how things need to change, and it just ain't what it used to be, or it's nowhere near as good as it should be. I don't know, maybe they read a little bit too much into the internet's idiotic fascination with Freemasons as secret conspirators running the world arm in arm with the lizard people and Bigfoot. Maybe these guys thought that they were joining some Hogwartian wizard school, and they're disappointed. Maybe they're right. But maybe you'll have an experience like mine. Maybe you will join a broad collection of good and sometimes extraordinary men who will become your brothers. Maybe you'll find yourself among these men sometimes, the same way I do, and think back to when you were alone and facing that fucking thundercloud of dread. And you reach out and put your arm around Tony's back. Tony's in the middle of telling Frankie about how he sets up his lathe. He doesn't even look at you. He just keeps talking. But while he does, he reaches around and hugs you back. He doesn't have any idea why, but his reaction is everything. No questions. Just reassurance. Yeah, buddy. I got you. I got you.
So this idea of a younger generation lost in the throes of independence to a fault, is that the case? Do we find that the younger generations connect different ways that have become accepted social norms? Social media, swiping right, swiping left, watching movies together on Discord with live commentary as you all make fun of the movies you're watching or laughing at the same parts. But as somebody who I think is in the throes of this, I was born in 81, so Gen Xers don't want me and neither do the millennials. But the fact remains here that I seem to operate in both worlds. I value in-person friendships immensely. I also value the incredible tools that social media gives me. For the most part, most of the people that I converse with on social media platforms might be close friends that just live so damn far away that I can't ever even get to them if I wanted to. Other times, they're people who live so close that you always think you have an opportunity to do it, so you never do. It's like when I used to live by the beach and never went. Strange. But even I recognize that it's just not the same. And in fact, I recognize this tiered level of privilege in that I'm privileged to be connected to somebody via social media, but I'm more privileged to have seen them with my own eyes and shook their hand. It's just a little different, and for me, a lot better. Next up, I'd love to read a piece by Brother Chuck Dunning, who penned recently and contacted me, and he asked, "Hey, is this something that the Midnight Freemasons could use?" And of course, without even reading it, I said yes, because it's Chuck Dunning. But after I read it, I thought, ooh, I like this. So, without further ado, let's check out this piece from Brother Chuck Dunning called "It's Just a Fraternity." While I'm not very active on social media, I do occasionally wander through its twisting catacombs. Recently, I was doing just that, and across 2 days, I repeatedly saw presumably well-meaning Masons in different virtual spaces making assertive comments like the title of this piece. Some of them even voiced frustration with people who are quote-unquote, trying to make it what it isn't. In almost every case, a more pointed complaint was made against Masons who regard the fraternity as a contemplative, spiritual, or philosophical tradition. Some specifically grumbled that their brothers, who want their lodge environments to be more sincere, reverent, and inspiring, are taking the fun out of Masonry. Interestingly, these complaining brothers didn't mention what they think the limits are to being a fraternity. Is this fraternity only about fun fellowship? Does it concern itself with self-improvement? Is mutual support part of it? And if it includes any of those things that are beyond simply making and hanging out with friends, then where exactly is the dividing line that separates them from spirituality, philosophy, and being contemplative? How is it that coming together for study and discussion of spirituality and philosophy interferes with good fellowship? Another observation I made was that none of these brothers referenced the ritual of this fraternity to support their claim. It made me wonder if they've ever listened to the actual words of the rituals that facilitate becoming a full member of this fraternity. It's hard to not conclude that, to them, many of the ritual's words are just fancy but meaningless paper, bows, and ribbons on the package of membership. Somehow, these brothers haven't fully realized that the words of our rituals are meant to teach real lessons, provide real instruction, and urge real efforts to learn and grow spiritually and philosophically. Similarly, it seems clear that the complaining brothers haven't studied the history of our craft. They haven't been impressed with the fact that the rituals of this fraternity were developed by men who were very interested in spirituality and philosophy. Those same men made sure that the shift from operative masonry to speculative masonry emphasized the spiritual and philosophical dimensions of the builder's art. These and later great leaders of Masonic thought have repeatedly stated in their own words how important a solemn and contemplative atmosphere is to accomplish the central intentions of our ritual. Heck, they even wrote such admonitions into the ritual itself, but I have digressed to the topic of the previous paragraph. Another problem behind the scenes of those complaints is that many brothers don't know how to differentiate spirituality from religion. So being taught that Masonry is not a religion, and that there should be no religious contention in the lodge, has given some brothers the impression that spiritual topics and attitudes have no place in this fraternity. This misunderstanding happens despite our ritual being filled with spiritual considerations and urging us to pursue them. But I digress again. Back to the point. Another issue in this context arises with brothers who, for whatever reason, cannot imagine or condone, let alone engage, spirituality that is inclusive of religious views other than their own. This problem is most unfortunately demonstrated when brothers seek to create rules and regulations that effectively impose their own beliefs on others, and even remove things from our rituals and official documents that they find uncomfortable. In effect, in their own religiosity, they try to turn this fraternity into an extension of their own churches. In the face of such ignorance and intolerance, it's no wonder that, with the best of intentions, other brothers would scream, "We're just a fraternity." The point about taking the fun out of Masonry makes a little more sense to me. Different people take joy in different things, and some of us obviously have our minds made up that there are irreconcilable differences between fun and anything that involves a sincere commitment to learning and growth. By the way, those closed minds can be on either side of the divide. There are fun folks resistant to learning and growth, and there are learning and growth types who avoid fun. But I'm mindful of how important play is as a means of assimilating information and developing skills, and how often the true masters of an art seem to be more at play than at labor with their creativity. It's also worth noting the staggering volumes of food and spirituous beverages consumed by Masons of the early Grand Lodge era, while they considered profound issues and concepts. Surely there are activities that demand more solemnity and decorum, such as degrees, installations, and funerals. It is also right that some forms of humor and good cheer have their own places apart. It's a hallmark of humanity, of human maturity, and thus of Masonic virtue to recognize where one is among these territories, and their overlaps, and to conduct oneself accordingly. I'm happy to say that I know many brothers who are very good at both sincere labor and lively refreshment. Now, you might think that I would condemn the complaining brothers I've been referencing, but I don't. They deserve the benefit of the doubt, and I have no reason to question that their position is consciously rooted in Masonry as they know it. The just a fraternity attitude was demonstrated to them before they became members. The negligence of our history and of the meaning in our rituals has inculcated by the examples of their elder brothers, and their perpetuation of that attitude and negligence has been rewarded with advancement and even honors. They may also be reacting to religious zealots posing as Masonic purists. In short, they're the best Masons they can be given the circumstances of their fraternal experience. How can I hold any ire against them? For me, all these observations and reflections point to three very important truths. First, if this fraternity is to be what its founders intended, what its rituals say it is, and are very well equipped to facilitate, then Masonic education is of the utmost importance. In our efforts to ensure a future for this fraternity, if we don't know what most deserves to be saved and passed on to future generations, then we risk throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Second, an examination of our history and ritual shows that the problem of trying to make it what it isn't began a long time ago, with the rise of the just a fraternity attitude. Third, this fraternity can both be fun and spiritually and philosophically meaningful for brothers with open minds and hearts. The two don't need to be mutually exclusive. But let's face it, fewer brothers will grasp any of these truths if we don't help everyone see them in our history and the words of our rituals. Without Masonic education, it really is just a fraternity, and that takes the meaning and the fun out of it for those who are actually seeking more light in all the colors our tradition offers. With good Masonic education, each brother knows he can appropriately enjoy whichever color he finds most attractive, and he can do so without preventing others from appropriately enjoying theirs. In the process, brothers might even discover some colors to be more attractive than they had expected, and in doing so, benefit from a richer experience. That's just the fraternity this fraternity is meant to be. Brother Chuck Dunning. Brother Chuck is, of course, an advocate, a facilitator, trainer, and consultant in contemplative practices with more than 30 years in professional fields of higher education and mental health, as well as in Masonry and other currents in the Western esoteric traditions. He's authored a couple books you might have heard of, Contemplative Masonry, Basic Applications of Mindfulness, Meditation, and Imagery for the Craft, and of course, The Contemplative Lodge, which is a manual for Masons doing inner work together. He's also a contributing author in The Art and Science of Initiation, and has published about a bazillion other articles in various places that all seem to have a great message for us. So our thanks goes out to Brother Chuck Dunning, Jr. for being a guest contributor on the Midnight Freemasons blog. I wonder, is there a guest emeritus? He would probably just fit that bill perfectly. But in any case, we really enjoyed this particular article, and if I had the means, I'd print 1,000 copies and mail them to every darn Grand Lodge officer in any capacity here in these United States. If only. But next up, education application with the one and only Mark St. Cyr. Let's check it out.
For the Whence Came You podcast, I'm Mark St. Cyr with this week's installment for its education application series. First, as always, the disclaimer. The following viewpoint does not represent any Grand Lodge or concordant body and is solely that of the presenter. Please be sure to check with your jurisdiction's rules for governance relating to anything discussed here before considering any application thereof. So with that said, let's dig in. In the prior episode, I gave an explicit example pertaining to the current culture that's rampant throughout the craft. For our next, I'll use something more overarching and hypothetical to provide a composite as to where the current culture is mistakenly applying its version of "we need to do something and this is something," all while not fully appreciating they are actually making matters worse. To be clear, the adherence to the idea, if we get more members, it solves most problems, is not a remedy. It can actually make matters worse, as we'll see in the following. So let's start with a question. Today, the number one issue facing the craft is attracting and retaining membership, correct? Wrong. The number one issue is attracting and retaining disciples to the craft, not simply members of it. Yes, disciples, not simple dues card holders. If the word disciple makes you feel a bit uncomfortable or downright apoplectic, shouting out, "This ain't no religion," let me address it by referencing Webster's definition of a disciple, which is a pupil or follower of any teacher or school, where a true disciple is not just a student or a learner, but a follower, meaning one who applies what he has learned. Is not the craft a school, if you will, whose sole purpose is to move the initiate, in other words, the follower, through learning processes known as degrees, then into the broader application of that learned into their daily life and subsequently into the public at large? Or are we just another social club? I mean, let's be candid here in our differentiation concerning disciples versus members argument. The former is what created and built and gave the craft its rich history. The latter is what you have today and is killing it, little by little, with every incremental increase of that rank. In other words, this was never designed to be a simple social club or gathering place for men to go and hang around. Or better yet, maybe since the word disciple puts some into a tizzy, maybe I should use the words of that great orator, David Byrne, from that new wave sect known as the Talking Heads. This ain't no party. This ain't no disco. This ain't no fooling around. Let's dig deeper. During the 18th century, using 1717 founding of our current system, the craft attracted people of great standing, wealth, and social prominence. As a matter of fact, it was probably its largest contingent. But let's add to this point, they were all living in a very dangerous world where one wrong infraction or comment could end in either imprisonment, torture, or death. Sometimes, all three. Remember, the Inquisition was still an ongoing concern during this period. So it's fair to say that exactly whom one was speaking to, associating with, along with where, were all very important matters. Trust, above all else, in all matters, was the coin of the day and far more valuable than gold in certain situations of that period. Why is this point important to our discussion today? It's because of this. This distinction, or this feature known as trust concerning the craft, was not found anywhere else in society. Today, this important feature has unwittingly turned into a bug. Let me explain. Without this trust feature, it would most assuredly have caused any person of power or social status far more than simple heartburn to partake in either our initiation or general meetings. Maybe you think this is off base. So let's pull this thread together, shall we? In a world of nobles and serfs, which this was, do you think for a moment a serf could address a noble in public, let alone just randomly ask a question? Let me answer that for you. That would be a decisive no. In that time, more often than not, his security detail, usually carrying various metal accoutrements known as swords, knives, and more, would have answered first his rendering of the assessment to whether or not to answer without hesitation, and it wouldn't have been pretty. So let's go a bit further. Imagine being in a lodge where that same noble is told, no security detail allowed in here, and also, here's a hoodwink. Make sure it's on good and tight. You'll find out why later. Here's another, but more general. Imagine again this same noble at a lodge meeting in full view in a mixed social status membership being ordered to shut down his talking points from the floor by someone who is of that serf class. What do you think is going to happen next? But wait, there's something missing, right? Because it's what about the security detail would do, correct? So here's the answer to that. Nothing. Why? They couldn't be there, for it would be tiled. This was part of the trust feature back in the day. Today, it's a bug. Let me explain the reasoning for it this way. For this example, his non-initiated security detail would not be welcomed nor warranted to partake with that brother and the brothers within a tiled meeting. Trust would still be treated as a paramount virtue to all within its walls. In other words, disciples of the craft only may attend. Period. No excuses regardless of rank, social status, or anything else. No entry unless a true brother. Or said differently, I do not pass go, I do not collect $200, end of story. So how did this feature go to a bug? It's a great question, so consider this. In today's culture, where adding membership is now the only thing that matters, that once trusted feature that attracted disciples now impedes general membership. Here's an example. Imagine a brother states, I have someone who wants to join, but he won't unless we allow his security detail in also. Can we do that? Today's response by the current culture comes faster than a pre-filled investigative committee report with, that's not a problem. As a matter of fact, that's great. Give everyone on his security detail petitions also, and we'll gain even more. Just bring them back here, and I'll sign the top line. You can sign the other. Heck, we might even get a ribbon from the Grand Lodge for his current membership drive contest. This is fantastic. You see the true issues here? Remember that trust factor that built the fraternity? What do you think is going to happen to anyone that signed up previously who took that issue to heart and still does? Hint. Starts with a D, ends with a T, and it rhymes with emit. But it gets worse. What do you think is going to happen to all of those new members as the others no longer show? You need that hint? Here it is. You'll be in even worse shape going forward because you're going to lose both in the end. Adding new members for the sole purpose of increasing numbers is nothing more than applying the placebo effect by adding more digits to the churn column. It's not a remedy. It's just kidding itself. This is today's recruitment by any means necessary culture, and it's killing the very thing it says it's trying to save. Think about it. In our next segment, we'll address the most prominent question. So how do you go about changing this culture? The answer may surprise you. So until next time, for the Whence Came You podcast, I'm Mark St. Cyr. See you then.
Once again, Brother Mark St. Cyr takes us on a little mindful journey into the areas of frankness and honesty. With his professional background, I'm left thinking about this in terms of other weird business ventures that I've watched fail in the past, and now thinking about the Grand Lodge. Losing not only the members they had, but also the members that they just got via whatever methodology they chose to buffer the books. And in the end, we're left with nothing. So what do we do? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this in the Craftsman Plus Facebook group. I invite you all to check it out. It is a group that is open exclusively to the financial backers of this podcast. And of course, as I mentioned in the top of the show, those are the folks that I'm thanking every single week. Our producers, legacy partners, contributors, and fellows, all of whom have played an integral role, either past or present, in assisting this program. So I want to thank those folks once more and offer once again, if you are curious on how you can assist the WCY podcast, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the options. Now, next week, I'll have some great education as well as a rundown of how well the MasonicCon Chicago went. A hint, it went awesome. No hang-ups, and a great time was had by all. I'll have more information on that next week, but we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on it. We'll get into the education as usual. So until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
Hey, see, is not.